Welcome to the official SBGAN podcast, hosted by Dr. Alex Nicely.
Greetings from your SBGAN podcast team. We've taken the opportunity recently to buttonhole for interviews as many learned, skilled, and experienced pediatric gastroenterologists and hepatologists as possible. This will become a note that accompanies the podcast. This podcast is an encounter with Dr. Roberto Canani. He's an expert in pediatric food allergy and an expert in the immunology and the immunologic dyscrasias, one might call it, associated with the nearly important category of ultra-processed foods. So, what are ultra-processed foods? How are they defined? How is it that they have come under the microscope of investigation in the last few years? What evidence indicates that ingestion of such foods facilitates pediatric gastrointestinal disease? And if indeed the association can be demonstrated and is proven, then by what mechanisms might they facilitate pediatric gastrointestinal disease? Back to the note. When you are listening to this podcast, then take a look at the cover letter that accompanies it. It includes three articles, or references to three articles, that are relevant to framing and to answering these questions. As concern is growing for the effects of ultra-processed foods on us all, listening to Dr. Canani today will help us understand what is known about the effects of such foods and how to integrate that knowledge into clinical care. Perhaps we should start with the idea of ultra-processed foods as categories, as everything from, from a raw apple to a Big Mac.
Thank you, Alex. This is a very important point because the people should know what doesn't mean ultra-processed food. We are full ultra-processed food everywhere. This is the consequence of Western diet style, because starting from the fact that the people like to have something ready to cook or ready to eat. And in other words, the company should add a lot of ingredient to the food to maintain, to preserve the organoleptic features for a week, for a month, for 2 or 3 months. And this is and this leads to the addition, the supplementation of foods with a lot of additive emulsifiers or cooking the food at high temperature. This leads to the increased production of other detrimental compound called advancing glycation end products. For example,
say that word again, say the phrase again.
Advanced glycation end products. What does it mean? If you're able to, if you like to grill your burger, if you like to grill your fish, for example, on a beautiful barbecue during the weekend.
Caramelization.
Yep, you're right.
Okay. The Maillard reaction.
Exposing the protein on the lipids at extremely high temperatures. This leads to a detrimental link with the other carbohydrates, and it leads to a transformation of the molecule. At this point, this molecule is able to induce detrimental action at different cell level, and we talk later in during this interview.
Okay. So there are four classes, as I understand it.
Yeah.
Could you walk us through those four classes?
Yeah, there are at least 8 different classifications at the moment.
Whoop, the most recognizable, okay.
The most recognizable that you can find out in many papers and is also adopted by FAO is NOVA classification that was proposed by Brazilian scientists many years ago. We have 4 groups of foods, starting for unprocessed foods, like an apple, for example, like a beautiful banana, moving forward according to different processing procedures to ultra-processed foods that contain a lot of salt, sugar, fat, unsaturated fats and these detrimental compounds such as a repeat emulsifier, advanced amplification end products and additives and other preservatives that are able to preserve the granulactive feature of the particular food or particular.
Well, let's take one such foodstuff through the four stages. Fresh from the cow, milk. Category one?
One.
Now we separate the milk, and now we have skim milk, and skim milk on one hand is still a one, but butter is a two?
Yeah.
Why?
Because there is a little bit activity that should be done, as you probably know, to make butter. It's not a natural compound.
So you put some energy into it, yeah. In order to separate the whey from
but
the fat.
But you're touching an important point. With the vast majority of evidence that we have now, and the number of evidence is growing up day by day. If you go into literature, in PubMed or the other engine search that you use every day in our clinical practice, the vast majority of the evidence is for ultra-processed foods.
Well, let's go to the, okay, from butter, then one step further, cheese.
Yeah.
Now, and then from stage three, or step or category three, to category four, and we're at a McDonald's cheeseburger.
Exactly.
Okay.
A cocaine or, I don't know, cheeseburger or French fries and snacks.
And cooking is part of what does that. But we're not really so much interested in the effects of cooking as we are in the industrial preservatives.
Yeah.
I think that most laypersons, like myself in this area, would say that ultra-processed foods are the ones that, as you put it, have eternal shelf life. They can't possibly decay because no microorganism can get its teeth into them.
Yep. Yeah, this is important also for the consumer. Mm-hmm. If you go to the supermarket, you like to buy something that is super nice to see with a beautiful color, very brilliant. Also consider the fact that this snack has been prepared 3 months ago. For example.
I don't care. I want it. Okay. Well, and now we come to the question of how does ingestion of such foodstuffs alter our immune regulation on one hand, allergic reactions, and alter our microbiome, our enteric microbiome on the other.
Yeah.
What's being found out in those areas?
Yeah. The problem was that during the last 1-2 decades, the consumption, the exposure to this ultra-processed food increases at super high level. Thinking about that, my country, Italy, the country of Mediterranean diet, now children are receiving more than 60% of the caloric intake by ultra-processed foods.
This is not a truth. This is cannot be true.
It's true, unfortunately.
Italy is... All cooking in the Western world comes from Italy.
Not all
cooking. It's all about fresh ingredients, simple ingredients, simply handled, and deliciously processed. If you don't mind my using the word here.
Yeah.
But in Italy, they're turning away from this.
Yeah, because starting from you're changing of many other stuff during our lifestyle, the women like to work very hard. It's impossible to find out some time to prepare beautiful Italian specialties, and this leads to the increased consumption. And soon after the COVID-19 pandemic, everything was very, very, very
Roberto,
bad.
You are making me very sad.
Yeah. Believe me, I would like to tell you a nice history. We are performing a beautiful activity in the school to explain what is the best things to do in terms of lifestyle. Let's spend time to make sport, blah, 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 blah. 4 years of age, 40% of children were unable to recognize a kiwi or a pear. They'd never seen a kiwi or a pear. This is the situation.
Okay. Not okay. But if that's how things are, if that's how things are before these kids reach socialization through school, that's distressing.
Yeah.
But
for this reason, the exposure increased very high. Now, if you look at the most recent paper, they are clearly demonstrated that in pediatric age around the globe, starting from United Kingdom to, I don't know, Poland or United States, mm-hmm. or blah, blah, mm-hmm. 50-60% of the caloric intake is mediated by the ingestion of ultra-processed foods. For this reason, we start the parallel epidemiological investigation. What is the most relevant exposome variables in the last 1-2 decades, leading to a huge increase in the prevalence, incidence, and severity of the most common chronic GI tract condition? If you look at antibiotics, yes, but antibiotics are quite similar in terms of consumption. In selected countries, also the use is falling down. Pollution, other drugs, PPI, for example, are falling down in terms of consumption. The most relevant environmental factor increasing year by year during the last 2 decades are the ultra-processed foods exposure and consumption. And for this reason, we started the investigation of the mechanism of action that could be able to explain a potential link between the exposure to this type of foods and the occurrence of these diseases at GI tract level, also outside the GI tract level. And our team and other teams around the globe are providing interesting data showing that selected compounds starting from emulsifiers or advanced aggregation end product could be able to interact with all the most relevant aspects in the pathophysiology of the most common GI tract chronic diseases in the pediatric age. Alteration of the gut barrier, you know the importance of the gut barrier, and meaning a reduction of the mucus thickness, that is a beautiful layer hosting the gut microbiome, and as well as preserving a detrimental contact between between our cells and the environment. Mm-hmm. Alteration in intestinal permeability, and this facilitates an abnormal exposure to antigenic peptide. This could be relevant, for example, for the occurrence of food allergy as well as other condition. And alteration of the immune system toward the inflammation, Th2 response, autoimmunity. So all these aspects are targeted by ultra-processed food that in different extent and different dose.
I'm going to bring in something that may no longer be current thought, but I believe that there has been a trend to ascribe allergic disease or an increase in allergic disease in pediatric populations to living too clean.
Yeah.
Now, living too clean, separation from the barnyard and from living, well, my great grandparents lived on one side of the barn and the hogs lived on the other side of the barn. And as a matter of fact, some of the bedrooms were above the hog stalls because that kept things warmer in winter. I know what you would say if you saw my kitchen, but really, I do live more cleanly than that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So with a reduction in environmental exposure to potential pathogens, to potential antigens, has come an increase in allergic manifestations of abnormal immune function.
Yeah.
How can this be separated out from a tendency to shift away from getting out in the dirt, picking your own vegetables, instead of going to the local Aldi?
Yeah. Yes, you are touching the two opposite parts of the history. Exposing the kid, the little in the life, to a farm living, for example, this leads to a beneficial action on the gut microbiome structure and function, and this leads to a beneficial modulation of the immune response toward the Th1 response. What does it mean? Tolerance. Mm-hmm. The baby is able to tolerate the foods. On the contrary, exposing the child to a super clean environment, or antibiotics, or PPI, proton pump inhibitors, or ultra-processed foods. Altogether, these factors are able to destroy the tolerance network, modulating in a detrimental way the gut microbiome and the immune system. So there are two opposite parts of the history. Of course, what you see now, a decreased exposure to farm living lifestyle, an increase exposure to ultra-processed foods altogether, these two factors are facilitating a huge increase in the prevalence, incidence, and severity of these conditions.
Well, let's just see what we can think about doing then. I know, for example, that in France, midday meals are provided by the schools.
Yeah.
Is that the case in Napoli?
Yeah, we are working very hard in modulating the quality of the foods that are offered at the school. I was impressed that 10 years ago, I was invited in Middle East because, you know, I'm traveling a lot to provide some talk and blah, blah. I was invited to the beautiful new school. Professor Bernie Canan, let's see this beautiful school. It's super modern, a lot of facility. The kids are super happy. And I was observing a never-ending line of people and or kids waiting to be admitted to school. And there are a couple of men exploring what is inside. In
the lunch boxes.
I was thinking about a bomb. I was thinking about some terrible dangers. No, they are exploring what's the quality of the meal. If the baby is taking some healthy meal, the baby will be admitted to the school. If the baby
is taking
junk foods, then no, you are not admitted. Please go back to home. Let's prepare something different. Let's obey. I was inspired by this beautiful adventure 10 years ago. I was understanding the potential or working for this reason, we started. You cannot imagine how many initiatives to educate the families and the school and all part of the globe to promote this kind of activities.
Well, I'm sure that laboratory studies have indicated that the components of ultra-processed foods are capable of causing disarray or damaging various mechanisms that maintain gut health and that maintain gut integrity. Now, it could be this way, sure enough, but is there evidence other than epidemiologic evidence in humans that these mechanisms actually are operating?
Yeah.
Tell me more.
Yes, of course. Today, for example, I give a talk on this mechanism, and we will talk about ultra-processed foods and food allergy. In this case, we demonstrate a clear modification of the microbiome of children. We are using beautiful technology called artificial gut microbiome system. I can collect the stool from an healthy baby. I can cultivate the microbiome. I can expose the microbiome to increase the dose of a particular ultra-processed foods. My final aim is to define an optimal cutoff. We are not living in a perfect world. It's impossible to say don't consume ultra-processed food anymore at the worldwide level. We are trying to work hard to define the best cutoff. And what I can say, Alex, today, if I'm exposing in this system the microbiome of healthy babies to more 3 meals per week composed of ultra-processed foods, I can observe the disappearance of more than 1,400 species of bacteria that are considered healthy, that are considered fundamentally important to maintain the health status of the baby, because these bacteria are producer of short-chain fatty acid, including butyrate, that probably know is a very stupid molecule, four atoms of carbons that are able to modulate more than 400 body function, including the protection against GI tract diseases.
Mm. You know how humans love to do anything other than change their lives that will promise them health. So capsules containing favorable bacteria, just like Ozempic, you don't have to engage in a diet. You can simply not care about food anymore, or you don't have to worry about emulsifiers. You can simply take these bacterial vitamins. Is that what our future is looking toward?
Yes, yes, we are working on this point, of course, because we need to. We are working at 2-3 different level. Of course, working hard in the lab to better define the mechanism of action, also the dose response effects, how much at what age, male, female, kids, mothers, and blah blah. At the same time, we started a lot of campaigns sponsored by Italian Ministry of Health, also to fight malnutrition, obesity, or metabolic syndrome that are also considered a logical consequence of an increased exposure to ultra-processed food. But don't forget the fact, Alex, that now we are observing a lot of patients affected by severe chronic GI tract diseases, and they are affected at the same time by obesity. In my center, 60% of patients affected by eosinophilic esophagitis are presenting with obesity. So there is there are a lot of connection between malnutrition, obesity, metabolic syndrome, and the occurrence of inflammatory bowel diseases, celiac disease, food allergy, eosinophilic esophagitis. So it's important to consider also the nutritional status of our patients with them to pay attention, not only to superb drugs able to modulate the immune response, but at the same time to thinking about how we can modulate, how we can restore nutritional status, changing and modulating the dietary habits of these patients.
So many facets, so many things to keep in mind, so much about which to be vigilant. And unfortunately, we have time constraints. So after raising all these interesting matters, I have to say, stop. And I have to ask you, at this juncture, we generally ask the person being interviewed to name for us something that speaks to him, that might even speak to Espigan, or Espigan's members, I mean to say, or to the topic that he or she has discussed. And we add that song as a listing to a Spotify playlist. It's the Espigan Favorite Songs Spotify playlist. What would you like to contribute to that playlist?
Yeah, thank you, Alex. I prefer to propose Nessun Dorma. What's the meaning of Nessun Dorma? Don't sleep. This is a very important point. This is a very important topic, not only for the pediatric gastroenterology community, but also for the entire community at the global level. So don't sleep, pay attention to the quality of the food, to the quality of the diet of the patients, because this could be extremely important to drive a completely different disease course. And also my ambition is to prevent, in the vast majority of cases, the occurrence of these chronic gastrointestinal disorders.
Roberto Cannani, thank you so much.
Thanks to you, Alex. It was my pleasure.